A powerful medieval state in the heart of Europe, stretching from the Rhine to the Oder, from the North Sea to the Alps. Its rulers considered themselves heirs of ancient Rome and the Empire of Charlemagne. This was the Holy Roman Empire. It seemed that such a power should have dictated the rules for all of Europe, but instead of a single center of authority, it was a mosaic of principalities, bishoprics, and free cities. The emperor held only nominal power over them. Why did this happen? Neighboring kingdoms like England and France gradually built strong, centralized monarchies, where kings subordinated the feudal lords. In the Holy Roman Empire, the opposite took place. Emperors constantly ceded power to princes, to bishops, to cities. And the further it went, the stronger the regions became, while the emperor's power weakened. In this episode, we will dive into medieval intrigues and political games. We will find out why the Holy Roman Empire remained at once a grand and fragile construct on Europe's political map, and why its emperors, once mighty rulers, became merely symbolic monarchs, first among equals. After the collapse of the Carolingian Empire, the heirs of Charlemagne united the German lands into a new state, the East Frankish Kingdom. Already in the next century, the 10th, power was taken over by Otto I the Great of the Saxon dynasty. He sought to revive the glory of ancient Rome and follow the path of the Carolingians. Otto transformed East Francia into a state that would later become known as the Holy Roman Empire. The rulers of the Ottonian dynasty sought to unite the fragmented state into a single centralized monarchy. They relied on the idea of authority deriving from Rome, the center of Western Christianity. That is why the Ottonians fought long and exhaustingly for control over the Italian peninsula. In their struggle for greatness and the unification of Germany with Italy, the emperors had to oppose two forces: the German dukes, who demanded autonomy, and the Catholic Church, which did not wish to submit to secular power. The powerful duchies, Bavaria in the southeast, Saxony in the north, Swabia in the southwest, Franconia in the very center of Germany, and Lorraine in the west, were centers of regional power. Their rulers saw the strengthening of imperial authority as a threat to their own autonomy. Thus, the struggle born of conflicting interests did not subside. The emperors sought unification, consolidation, and subordination, while the dukes desperately defended their autonomy. But for the emperors, this was far from their only challenge. They also had to enter into fierce confrontation with the Catholic Church. To curb the dukes' claims to wide autonomy, the emperors began to rely on bishops. They were appointed not only as spiritual leaders, but also as secular rulers of lands. This gave monarchs a double advantage: control over vast resources and loyal allies in the struggle against the hereditary nobility. Moreover, bishops had no children heirs, so after their death, their lands reverted back to the emperor. Such a policy enraged the Pope. He considered himself the only one with the right to appoint bishops. Therefore, he viewed the emperor's actions as direct interference in the authority of the Church. The culmination of the confrontation with the Catholic Church was the investiture controversy, essentially a dispute over the right to appoint bishops. The main figures were Emperor Henry IV and Pope Gregory VII. Eventually, the Supreme Pontiff excommunicated the emperor. Seizing the opportunity, powerful princes rose up against Henry IV's rule. As a result, in the winter of 1077, he was forced to go to Canossa Castle in Italy. There, Henry IV stood barefoot in the snow for 3 days, begging forgiveness from Pope Gregory VII. After this humiliation, the prestige of Henry and of the emperors in general was shaken, while the positions of the German princes and the Catholic Church significantly strengthened. The Holy Roman Empire continued to fragment into smaller domains. This disintegration grew steadily. The power of the emperors became increasingly symbolic. In reality, everything was ruled by the powerful princes. Even such legendary rulers as Frederick I Barbarossa and his grandson Frederick II Hohenstaufen, despite their vast ambitions and desire to restore the former might of imperial authority, could not overcome the resistance of regional powers or stop the decentralization of the Holy Roman Empire. It was during the reign of Frederick I Barbarossa that the name Holy Empire first arose. The emperors of the Ottonian dynasty had considered themselves heirs of the Roman Empire, with their authority given by God. But only in the 12th century did the word holy, sacrum imperium, appear in the empire's title. At first, it replaced the word Roman. Later, both designations, holy and Roman, became fixed in the name. This was purely a political move. The emperor wanted to emphasize the divine origin of his power, while also asserting independence from the Pope and the Catholic Church, who claimed supreme authority over all of Christian Europe. Frederick I Barbarossa tried in vain to restore past greatness. He waged war against the Italian city-states in the north of the Italian peninsula and fiercely opposed Pope Alexander III. Yet, his attempts to subdue the Lombard League and bring the Catholic Church under control ended in failure. In the decisive Battle of Legnano, the Italian infantry crushed the German knights. Frederick II Hohenstaufen inherited lands in southern Italy through his mother, Queen Constance I of Sicily. He spent most of his reign in Sicily and on crusades. Meanwhile, the German princes took advantage of his absence and strengthened their own power. During the reign of this outstanding emperor, documents appeared that effectively secured the autonomy of the German regional monarchs. The princely privileges of 1220 and 1232 granted the secular and ecclesiastical princes of the Holy Roman Empire wide rights, including their own courts and armies and the minting of coins. This was, in effect, the recognition of their semi-sovereignty and a sentence upon a centralized empire. Three main forces benefited from the weakness of the emperor and the decentralization. First and foremost, the dynastic principalities. Influential aristocratic families such as the Luxembourgs in Bohemia, the Wittelsbachs in Bavaria, and the Habsburgs in Austria quickly grew wealthy, seized vast territories, and became powerful regional monarchs. Later, they used this influence to claim the imperial crown. The ecclesiastical principalities did not lag behind. The archbishops of Mainz, Cologne, and Trier wielded not only spiritual authority, but also large territories, armies, and real political power. The church became another center of authority, one the emperor could not fully control. Free imperial cities, Augsburg, Nuremberg, Lübeck, also found their place in this game. They flourished as centers of trade and craftsmanship. Strong city walls and wealth supported their political independence, and their direct subordination to the emperor in practice granted them self-government. All these semi-independent states within the Holy Roman Empire, hundreds of larger and smaller domains with their own laws and armies, turned it into a colorful tapestry, a true mosaic where each piece had its own interests and ambitions. The time after the death of Frederick II Hohenstaufen in 1250 was especially telling. Then, the weakness of central authority showed itself fully. A period of interregnum began. For nearly a quarter of a century, the empire lived without a recognized monarch. During this time, powerful princes ruled as they pleased, while the imperial throne remained vacant. In the 14th century, an event occurred that finally cemented the political fragmentation of the Holy Roman Empire on a legislative level. By then, the struggle for the imperial crown had reached its peak. Powerful dynasties, one after another, put forward their candidates for the throne and made them emperors. But the crown alone no longer guaranteed full authority. Everything was decided by the princes. Louis IV of Bavaria of the Wittelsbach dynasty and Charles IV of Luxembourg fought long for power and the throne. After the death of Louis IV in 1347 and 8 years later the coronation of Charles IV, the new ruler sought to avoid further war with other powerful dynasties. The princes, weary of constant instability, saw in this a chance to secure their broad autonomy. In 1356, Charles IV of Luxembourg issued the Golden Bull, a kind of constitution of the Holy Roman Empire, and without exaggeration, the most important document in its history. The bull was a compromise between the emperor and the princes, and a political step that forever changed the fate of the empire. Its provisions were the logical conclusion of long-lasting decentralization. The bull confirmed the right to elect the emperor solely to 7 prince electors, creating a narrow circle of the most powerful princes. They officially received the decisive say in the empire's destiny. The elections were to take place without the participation of the Pope. This was a direct challenge to the papacy's claims to secular authority. The Golden Bull also enshrined the principle of territorial sovereignty for the imperial princes within their domains. From then on, they could not only pass down their lands according to the principle of primogeniture, indivisible inheritance by the eldest son, but also exercise supreme jurisdiction, collect taxes, and even mint their own coins. All this, in practice, turned the emperor into the first among equals. Who, then, were the 7 mighty princes to whom the Golden Bull entrusted the destiny of the Holy Roman Empire? They were divided into ecclesiastical and secular electors. The ecclesiastical electors included the 3 archbishops of Mainz, Cologne, and Trier. Their territories stretched along the Rhine, the heart of medieval Europe. Among the secular electors was the King of Bohemia, whose lands formed the eastern center of imperial power, Count Palatine of the Rhine, who controlled key territories along the Rhine, the economic core of the empire, the Duke of Saxony, whose northern lands were of vital strategic importance, and the Margrave of Brandenburg, whose powerful electorate was gaining strength and becoming a leading force on the empire's northeastern frontier. Thus, the electors possessed extensive and strategically significant territories of the Holy Roman Empire, from the wealthy Rhine region and the Elbe Valley in the west and north, to prosperous Bohemia in the east. Their lands became true centers of powerful regional authority, finally transforming the empire into a confederation. Without their support, emperors could no longer make key decisions. The Golden Bull defined not only the list of electors and the procedure for electing the emperor, but also the key cities where the most important imperial events were to be held. Frankfurt became the site of the election of the monarch. The coronation of the emperor took place in Aachen, the unofficial capital of the Holy Roman Empire. And Nuremberg was chosen as the main city where imperial diets were usually convened. Great significance also attached to the residences of various emperors, Prague and Vienna. In the second half of the 14th and the first half of the 15th centuries, emperors continued to struggle for their own authority and status. They relied on titles, symbols, solemn ceremonies, and lavish coronations, all to sustain the fleeting idea of a united empire. Yet real power remained with the electors and the free cities. Dynastic principalities and archbishoprics controlled the economy of the empire. They had powerful armies of their own, introduced laws and taxes that differed from those of the imperial center. In these lands, even local representative bodies emerged, the Landtags. These were assemblies of estates in the German feudal principalities, where regional rulers coordinated various matters with the nobility, the church, and the towns. The free imperial cities continued to flourish thanks to trade and crafts, and they created strong alliances. The most famous of these was the Hanseatic League. For several centuries, this trading union was the economic center of Northern Europe and controlled commerce in the North and Baltic Seas. Another important alliance was the Swabian League of Towns in the south of the Holy Roman Empire. This military union of free imperial cities opposed the territorial ambitions of powerful princes and fought to preserve the privileges, rights, and freedoms of its members. These alliances also had their own armies, engaged in diplomatic maneuvers, and pursued their own economic policies. they often acted as independent players on the international stage. From the mid-15th century, the Austrian Habsburg dynasty, a European aristocratic house that would later become one of the most powerful monarchic families in Europe, secured the throne of the Holy Roman Empire. Even so, the early Habsburgs limited themselves to their dynastic holdings, meaning they controlled only Austria, but not the empire as a whole. This was the phenomenon of emperors without an empire, when the early Habsburgs, who held the imperial throne for 3.5 centuries, wielded real power only in their Austrian lands. The Habsburgs became a convenient choice for the German princes. Their large possessions lay far from the main imperial territories, and therefore posed no threat to the autonomy of local rulers. Later, this caution defined the nature of imperial power. The Habsburgs used the title not to centralize the entire Holy Roman Empire, but to strengthen their own dynastic influence. At the same time, the imperial diets, already mentioned, became the key arena for compromise. This estate representative body acquired particular significance. The emperor, powerful princes, and representatives of the free cities of the empire gathered at the Diet. It became the center of governance in the Holy Roman Empire. There, military matters were resolved, laws were enacted, and taxes introduced, with every important decision born through complex negotiations and a balance of interests. At the end of the 15th century, the imperial reform of Maximilian I of Habsburg, who was king of Germany from 1486 and emperor from 1508 to 1519, finalized the formation of the Imperial Diet as the highest representative body of the estates. From then on, the monarch's power weakened even further, while the imperial estates, which included the high aristocracy, senior clergy, and the ruling class of the free imperial cities, became the social foundation of the Holy Roman Empire. It was never a typical medieval state. The Holy Roman Empire never became centralized. Rather, it turned into a decentralized entity with a complex feudal hierarchy. The early rulers had attempted to build a powerful state with claims to dominance in Europe. But despite its grand name, the empire became a confederation, and its numerous principalities, bishoprics, and free cities united only under the symbolic authority of the emperor. Over time, the Holy Roman Empire increasingly resembled a conglomerate of autonomous states and cities, without a common army, finances, or legislation. The emperors, despite holding the highest title in the Western Christian world, were forced to compromise with powerful princes and limit their own powers, retaining real authority only in their dynastic lands. On the one hand, this fragmentation slowed political development and became the chief obstacle on the long road to the creation of a unified German state. Unlike neighboring England and France, the Holy Roman Empire, with its core in Germany, never managed to achieve unification and centralization. On the other hand, the fragmentation also had a positive effect. It promoted economic development and cultural diversity. The free imperial cities became centers of trade and crafts, developing self-governance, guilds, and artisan associations. Cities such as Aachen, Worms, Cologne, and Speyer flourished thanks to their advantageous geographic locations on important trade routes. The Hanseatic League, with key centers like Lübeck and Hamburg, united hundreds of North German towns and became a true economic superpower of the late Middle Ages, controlling trade in Northern Europe. The Hansa had its own courts, trade offices, and even an army, which allowed it to effectively protect its interests and secure maritime routes. Each region and city had its own unique history, traditions, and architectural style. Instead of a single cultural center like Paris or London, the Holy Roman Empire had numerous hubs of culture. Local rulers competed for prestige, funding the construction of magnificent cathedrals and palaces. This created a unique palette of architectural masterpieces, blending Romanesque, Gothic, and Renaissance styles. Emperors, dukes, prince-electors, and city councils founded medieval universities, Charles University in Prague, the University of Vienna in Austria, and the universities of Heidelberg, Cologne, and Erfurt in Germany. These educational centers not only spread knowledge, but also stimulated the development of theology, law, medicine, and printing. The complex structure of the Holy Roman Empire, with its constant negotiations and balance of powers, had deep and long-lasting consequences. Initially, it became one of the preconditions for the Protestant Reformation, when each influential German prince gained the right to choose the religion of his territories. Later, the empire's fragmentation led to one of the bloodiest conflicts in European history, the Thirty Years' War. Different parts of the empire fought on opposing sides, for and against the emperors. Ultimately, this conflict ended with the Peace of Westphalia in 1648, which legally enshrined the sovereignty of the principalities. Later, after the dissolution of the Holy Roman Empire during the Napoleonic Wars, its legacy became the foundation for the so-called German Question, and the German people's search for a path to political unity of their lands. The Holy Roman Empire is a unique example of European state-building, where the very idea of unity constantly collided with the desire for regional autonomy. It was an empire without a true emperor, but with hundreds of princes and cities that created its extraordinary history.